Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Continuing the discussion on the impact on consumers, I suppose, of the general economic environment. The first, of course, being what we just heard from Chairman of Eskom, Tedzo Nyati, which is the relief on the load shedding front. However, other prices remain high. We've also had relief from fuel prices, by the way. And as you heard in yesterday's CPI number, in general, the food basket, more or less a steady eddy, but in general, our consumer basket is looking a little bit better, growing at just 4.4%. But Nikki Quinn, retail lead for Sub-Saharan Africa at NIQ and GFK, wants to talk to us a little bit about where the pressures continue to come from. Nikki, thank you so much for your patience and apologies for keeping you. How are you this evening?
No problem at all, and I could have carried on listening.
Listening to him, right? I want to bundle him into my car. Okay, so on two days ago, you released this sort of report highlighting where South African shoppers have spent 181 billion rand on FMCG in one quarter, which is an increase of 4.8% on the same period last year, which is not the way the inflation. I mean, it's not too far from inflation, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's basically, if you take inflation out of the equation, it's flat.
Okay, so that's not bad news. However, tech and durables, talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so in the tech and durables area of the business, it's obviously, so that's essentially anything with a plug on it that plugs into your wall. That's valued at about 31 billion. So it's significantly smaller than fast moving consumer goods. But really, the performance is pretty stable within that. There are some areas within tech and durables where we are seeing some growth coming through. In fact, double-digit growth. But overall, the growth within tech and durables is lower than that we're seeing within FMCG. But given some of the things, particularly the decline in the interest rate announced today, perhaps we could see some light in the next couple of months around tech and durables particularly.
Okay, that's kind of positive. I mean, I imagine that, you know, a relatively more robust rand also helps because that's largely imported.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can't believe it. I looked at the exchange rate a couple of hours ago, and the exchange rate today is more favorable than it has been in the last year.
So absolutely. That's
positive news as well.
Okay. What else can we be looking at? Talk to us about fresh and frozen foods. I mean, do they track in the different directions?
So really interesting. And whilst we were talking a little bit about load shedding earlier, one of the things that is relieving consumers generally is the pause in load shedding, right?
Right.
Despite the fact that they're still feeling quite cash strapped, and I think that is important to bear in mind because in their opinion, the cost of living is still high. But if we look at that average growth of 4.8% within total FMCG categories, right, so that covers everything from food, toiletries, home care, that kind of thing. If we look at both fresh and frozen food, they are growing ahead of that at 8 and 9%. And I think some of that is probably as a result of the relief in load shedding because, you know, when you are cash strapped, right, to be buying fresh and frozen stuff, to be at the risk of it actually, you know, having to throw some of that out, I think I would steer away from it.
Yes.
Many of our consumers in South Africa would do that. So it's interesting to see that we're seeing this really significantly stronger rate of growth within fresh and frozen than the average within FMCG.
And to be clear, is that volumes or is that price and volume?
It's in value.
Value, gotcha. Okay, fine. And then the interesting thing about that also is one of the data points that came out from StatsSA about the inflation rate was that sort of restaurants, prices at restaurants seem to be coming off. And I imagine if I know my fridge will be on, I'm more inclined, yeah, to head to groceries, I suppose, than hoping to eat out, which we, I think, did far too much of for those 2 years that we were saddled with load shedding. Tell me something. The retail spend barometer is new, and I'm curious. What were you hoping to achieve in launching it? And in terms of digging deeper than just the numbers that we either get from the retailers themselves and the numbers that we get from the Stats SA?
So you're right, it is new. It's new in South Africa, but Nielsen IQ is a global company. We're operating in many countries around the world, and we are actually the 15th country. So we feel quite privileged to be actually be included in this. And it really is to help give a full view of what's happening across FMCG and tech and durables. Nielsen IQ and GfK, which was a company that did the retail panels on tech and durables, they merged in July last year to help give the around the total consumer, well, a larger consumer spend. And I think it will also be really interesting going forward for us to be able to compare our results to other markets around the world and see where things are, you know, where we're different, where there's similarities and so on.
Okay, that helps. You know where else it helps? I mean, and you mentioned it a bit in the report as well, is these global trends that are taking hold in South Africa. And it's not entirely just global, but it's more Americanization of retail around the world. We have no Thanksgiving. And yet, Black Friday is a huge issue. I mean, it has become a huge thing in South Africa, albeit the sales aren't the same. And the one thing that I understand of Black Friday, correct me if I'm wrong from a global perspective, one, Thanksgiving is always on the last Thursday
in November.
Thank you. It's the last Thursday in November. It's a seasonal end in terms of sales. And so America, which has high costs in warehousing, I think, in terms of being able to deliver to such a huge country across so many states, it almost costs them less to just sell things at, you know, breakneck 10%, 90% off prices, rather than keeping that in storage into a new season. And that Black Friday happens to start at midnight at the end of Thanksgiving, right? So you're full of turkey and you've had your nap and then you go and camp outside Target and Walmart. It's interesting to me how South Africa has taken it on. One, we don't have the same, I don't think, storage sort of concerns. And so the prices don't get slashed to the same degree. And yet, people do still save up for Black Friday buying. And you're seeing that in the numbers, aren't you?
Yes, we are, most definitely. That we do see. And to be perfectly clear, it's turned into no longer just Black Friday, but it's Black November, right? The entire month of November, these specials start in the first week kind of thing. And we see these discounts happening. And in a lot of categories, the discounts are quite deep. The discounts get deeper and deeper the closer we get to the end of the month of November.
That's true. And of course, and they do have that respect of the continued festive season sales and or post Christmas sales.
Yes, exactly. And I think given the fact that South African consumers are so cash strapped, and although we don't have Thanksgiving, I have to say when I was a child, we didn't have Halloween either. And that has changed, you know. So
that's true.
A lot of South Africans do adopt some American cultural activities and so on. So, but I'm really grateful for Black Friday.
Yes.
I personally am buying a couple of things during the month of November. And I'm hoping to get some good discounts, and everybody is looking for those discounts.
I'm always here for a discount too, trust. I agree. Okay, so you're right about the adoption of Halloween. I remember in high school, we tried to trick-or-treat and we got yelled at by all the neighbors, and now it's a commonplace. So it's definitely something that's become more culturally acceptable. You also note the two-part system is expected to boost household expenditure in the second half of this year. And I think that is something that many economists have also agreed with.
And I heard earlier today that it's that 30 to 39-year-old cohort that are probably most likely, because they still have a longer period ahead of them to save for future retirement. I guess people after that are going to be more conservative and know that they need to keep on saving and not take out of it. But that will offer some funding and serve as a tailwind ahead of Black Friday and, of course, festive season as well. Personally, I wouldn't recommend early withdrawals of pension funds.
Neither would I, but it ain't my money. Exactly, Nikki. But Nikki, really grateful for this insight and excited to see further editions of this review of retail spending. Nikki Quinn is retail lead for Sub-Saharan Africa at NIQ and GfK, showing us a little bit of some of the retail trends that we're seeing both in tech as well as food and FMCG. It's 7:47.
Kaya Talk.
How much more?
On the street.
Information does anybody need?
On the air.
It's 7:47 still, and looking forward to our final conversation of the evening. We would obviously ordinarily have spoken to Pumela Mutine around a few minutes ago, but we have run over and she's graciously given us her space. But I just want to highlight to you to please make sure you stay tuned between 8 and 10 for her point of view. She's going to, I'm sure, have a very electrifying discussion this evening with Professor Onkhoputsi JJ Dabane. I can only imagine. Oh, nope. Not happening? Oh, yes, that's what I thought. Okay, sorry, my producer's giving me hand signals. And so that will be happening between 8 and 10. So please do stay tuned for that conversation. But before we get there, our final conversation of the evening, we're going to be speaking with Liska Kloppers. She's head of client strategy at Data EQ, talking a little bit about what customers are saying online about South Africa's leading insurers. Now, in as much as we did speak to Adrian Gore a little earlier about Discovery, we didn't go too much into the insurance side of things. We focused mostly on meds. But it would be lovely to get that perspective from all of you. And insofar as we speak about the cuts in interest rates and consumer spending, in the acknowledgement that insurance itself is a cost and a line item in our expenditure. Liska, thank you so much for joining us this evening. How are you today?
Hi, Lulufiwa. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So you've published a 2024 South African Insurance Sentiment Index, and it's giving perceptions of South African consumers towards 15 of the leading long and short-term insurers. It's a very broad study. First of all, it takes place over a full year period with almost a million online conversations. Won't you tell us the key takeaways?
Yes, sure. Yeah, so we're looking from April 2023 to March 2024. As you said, we looked at just shy of a million mentions, and then we processed that data coming in from all public online platforms, specifically X and Hello Pizza in this case. We processed it through a combination of human and artificial intelligence, which allows us to accurately look at all South African language specifically. So across the industry, the South African insurers found a overall positive net sentiment. What we mean by net sentiment is if we take all the compliments and all the praise and we deduct all the negativity and complaints, where do we net out? So we effectively had a net sentiment of positive 18 expressed across all of those top 15 insurers in South Africa. Comparing that to other industries, banking we found also had a positive sentiment of 24%, while telcos, as another example, was negative 19.
That's
hectic. So effectively, you know, I think people often have the misconception that people are only negative on these public platforms, and kind of see that they net out actually more positive, which is a lot of their effort actually in engaging with their consumer base well. And then getting positive feedback from them.
It's interesting that you say that. I was about to say to you, isn't it interesting that X and Hello Pizza tend to be the complaint platforms? But it's also telling in terms of the insurance companies, as you say. And at the top of the pile are King Price, My Way, and Momentum. What did they do to get sort of the best responses from their consumers?
Exactly. Yeah, King Price, My Way, and Momentum definitely stand out. Overall, King Price had positivity, predominantly driven by operational, but it seems to be that the customer service teams are being quite effective, not only on these platforms, but on other platforms as well. And then getting a subsequent positive review and thanks from customers on Hello Pizza specifically. So a lot of that praise coming through for them there. My way on an operational side, in other words, around customer experience, but also driven by effective campaigns to promote products and services. Significant standouts there for them were their We Drive benefits, their roadside assistance and 24-hour emergency services.
Yes.
Those campaigns boosted their sentiment overall by 47%.
Sure.
So quite effective from their teams. And then momentum on the reputational side, they were the standout there. They continued to have campaigns like She Owns Her Success that promotes not only empowering women, supporting small businesses, but also financial growth and education that's really well received from the broader public.
I think this is critical. One of the things that just, if we can talk a little bit about the construct of the study, I think what's particularly impressive about these results is that these aren't prompted questions. This is just a review of existing commentary.
Exactly.
So nobody is kind of incentivized to position an answer a certain way, you know, like with political polls. Would you say that's the strength of this particular review?
I think any entity needs to have a rounded view of their consumer base and of their voice of customer. So I think it's, you know, there's definitely a place for surveys, for elicited feedback, for sort of CSAT and NPS. But rightly to your point, what we're looking at here is effectively what do people say when you aren't necessarily asking? What are their unsolicited raw views about your products, your services, and how does that stack up against the industry as a whole?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really valuable perspective to have and to take on board. But interestingly, what we find in across industries, not just with the insurers, although insurers and banking seem to be leading the way here, is that the brands are treating these platforms as service platforms and no longer just for a place for consumers to blindly kind of engage and service up these unsolicited kind of either reviews or feedback. But brands then respond and say, you know, if it's negative, we're sorry about that experience. Mm. How can we help? And that's effectively what is turning this around. But so we're seeing a lot of positive feedback around customer service, which is very unique. You know,
yeah.
Often people are quite positive about that. With the insurers, that service sentiment overall is net positive at 40%.
Yes.
So yeah, really, really good efforts by them. But I think in the back end, you know, service can only go so far. The concern that we're finding in the insurance industry is the claims process.
Yes.
But while service agents are responsive and trying to support, there's sort of a back end, the back end machine
computer
around process.
No.
You know, updates on the status of that claim, and often an expectation gap when there is a final decision on what was expected.
Mm.
You know, what consumers thought they bought and what they actually are given at the end. So perhaps some things needs to be addressed in the sales and onboarding process as well, in terms of consumer education and what they actually buy.
Well, I mean, this is insurance, right? Which, you know, with all the respect to the insurance industry, the nature of it, which is ultimately liability, means that fine print is its defining characteristic. Otherwise it would all go out of business, right? And I must admit as a consumer that I think most consumers can admit to the fact that we simply don't read that fine print to the extent that we should. We can complain that the print is fine, but it is printed. And so, unfortunately, when one is going through a claims process, there's that psychology that says it's urgent for me and therefore it should be urgent for you and it should be simple and I feel hard done by or owed. And that stops us from being rational about, okay, but did you read the fine print?
Yes, no, I think that's definitely valid. At the same time, though, I do think there is an onus on sales agents and on the insurers, specifically when it comes to vulnerable consumers who perhaps don't necessarily understand all of the detail in that fine print.
Mm.
And I think, yeah, there's I think enough said. I'll leave that.
No, you're right. Okay, so we all have some responsibility. The one area, my goodness, Liska, if you could, if a meteor hit Earth and somehow call centers disappeared, except for the employment numbers, I would just, I wouldn't complain. And that seems to be quite high up on what's driving service complaints.
Rafiri, I think your sentiment is definitely echoing what's out there in the broader public. The overall net sentiment towards call centers was at a whopping negative 85%.
Jeepers.
So very few thanks and compliments around those experiences. And interestingly, we found, it wasn't necessarily just the poor service. And I think probably hampered by a similar thing that I referred to earlier, where there's something behind the call center that those agents can only do so much. There's a broader claims process that's got to kind of go through its motion. But there were some reports about the kind of conduct of staff, unresponsive staff, sometimes actually reports of completely false details, so consumers sort of implying that insurers are trying to not be contacted at all, but also on the other side, unsolicited contact, which I'm sure you probably echo my sentiments here as well.
Yes,
getting those the spam calls and consumers then raising concerns, not only the frustration about the call itself, but the concern around our data protection and how they're getting that information in the first place. But then also, sort of ironically, the sort of feedback coming through from the website, where some insurers direct their consumers to the website, and they can then ask for a call back. Often it's a sales sort of opportunity. So what we're seeing in the negative feedback around the call center is that where we actually have someone who wants a call back and is interested in a product isn't getting that. And the complaint is, so there's kind of this missed opportunity and perhaps a shift in focus that needs to happen on the sales side of the call center as well,
Absolutely. Very briefly, we've got about a minute left. I've jumped over the Hello Peter effect because I think it's quite interesting. And this is, you were saying the call center almost feels as though they don't want to engage. And yet it had such a big part, played such a big part in the higher rating in net sentiment.
Yeah, very interesting. And we're actually seeing the insurers leading the way here. Effectively, where I sort of touched on it earlier, where insurers are treating these platforms as service platforms and they actually engage with the consumer. It's not sort of, stick Wait your head in the sand and leave the view. How can we help? We're sorry about that. It then transforms into, thank you for that, Interestingly, also driving positive feedback around pricing and products, because those service agents actually help a consumer find a better product or premium or, something that suits their needs. So,
excellent.
Yeah, overall, that Hello Peter effect improved overall sentiment for the industry by 14%. But if we look just at operational and, the kind of customer service and product side of things, that was, it improved the overall industry sentiment by 80%.
Sure. Impressive.
So a really significant, impact and there. And I think...
Apologies. Sorry, I was just going to say, and a lesson for other industries.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and I think also, off the back of the call center, meet consumers where they're at. I think when you meet them on a platform of their choice, it's sort of, you start off on a better footing.
Certainly do. Liska Kloppers, thank you so much. Head of Client Strategy at Data EQ. Really excellent insights. I encourage you all to take a look at the sentiment index for the insurance industry and others.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.